a Rayo original podcast.
Hi, I'm Catherine Ryan, and you're listening to Dr. Nicola's Second Opinion, the bonus podcast where we unpack the secrets of biological aging with a healthy dose of hard science. Coming up, we'll bust some more myths on aging. Plus, we'll answer your questions and wrap it all up in a bow with Dr. Nick's Quick Fix, giving you something simple and powerful you can try today. This week, we've got more Jimmy Carr for you as Dr. Nick takes you deeper into the issues raised by his results.
Dr. Nicola's Second Opinion.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Dr. Nick's Second Opinion. And today, as Catherine said, we are going to be revisiting something that came up in our episode with Jimmy Carr. Now, slight spoiler alert, if you haven't listened to that episode yet and you don't want to know what his biological age result came back as, then you might want to pause this and come back to it later. Because Jimmy's biological age came out at 27 years old and his chronological age is 53. So that is a huge 26 years younger.
They say you can't polish a turd, but you can roll it in glitter. I've made the best of a bad lot. I was, you know, this is it. And I've kind of, I don't know, I've maintained it.
And when I asked him what he does differently, he shared three key habits that he swears by. And they were fasting, sauna, and cold plunge.
I mean, I love it. I don't know why I like it so much. So if you finish on the cold, you get like dopamine for about sort of 6 hours and it's quite euphoric. I can't meditate. I'm terrible at it. I can never find the time. It always seems like I should be working, I should be doing something. But somehow going in that, the physical manifestation of meditation, of going, oh, well, I'll sauna, cold plunge or whatever for an hour, get up before the kids and do that. That makes you sort of feel like it's a physical meditation.
Yeah. It's like a ritual, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's probably got as much benefit to my mental health.
For how long are you in the cold?
In the cold, like, I think about 2 minutes.
Oh, my God.
I sort of think anything more than that is you're just showing off, but it's sometimes you are just showing off.
Now, on the surface, these things sound quite extreme, like the kind of things that are trending online in the biohacker space. They sound like the sort of routines that you see and you think, okay, is that really necessary? Is there really any science behind it? But the bigger question is have these habits actually influenced Jimmy's biological age result? And is that why his result came out so young?
Dr. Nicola's Second Opinion.
Now, although all of these practices might seem a bit intense, they all have something very interesting in common. And that is that they take the body out of its comfort zone. And biologically speaking, that matters because as humans, we are not designed to be constantly comfortable. So if you think about it, from an evolutionary perspective, our ancestors experienced regular fluctuations in their environment. They went with periods without food. They had extremes of temperature. They had, you know, physical exertion followed by recovery and rest. But modern life that we're living today has completely removed all of this. We're sitting in temperature-controlled rooms with heating and air conditioning. We've got constant access to food. We're eating all the time. We're snacking. We rarely experience any meaningful environmental stress. And this is where an important scientific concept comes in, known as hormesis. And that is hormesis.
Science word of the week.
Now, hormesis is the idea that a small but controlled bit of stress actually makes the body stronger. So this is not overwhelming stress. This is not burnout, but brief intentional challenges that switch on repair and resilience pathways in our cells. And exercise is the simplest example of this. If you stress a muscle, it adapts by becoming stronger. And interestingly, fasting, heat, and cold exposure all seem to work in a similar way. So let's take fasting, like Jimmy spoke about. Now, for most of human history, food was not constantly available. We didn't snack every 3 hours, and periods going without food were simply part of our life. And when the body goes without food for a period of time, it pretty much switches gears. So our insulin levels will drop and we will move from burning glucose to actually burning fat. And this is called metabolic switching. And this metabolic flexibility is strongly associated with better long-term health. But beyond fuel use, fasting also activates a lot of other cellular repair pathways. So it activates something called autophagy, which is essentially like your cell's housekeeping system. So what this does is it means that damaged proteins and any cellular debris essentially are broken down and actually recycled. So it's like your cells get a bit of a cleanup when food isn't constantly coming in because the body realizes it needs to be conservative and not wasteful. It needs to fix and recycle things rather than just burning through energy all the time. Now, in animal models, this autophagy has been strongly linked to longevity. And in humans, time-restricted eating has been shown to improve insulin sensitivity, reduce inflammation, and support mitochondrial efficiency, all of which we know are linked to better biological age. But one thing I definitely want to point out is that when it comes to fasting, more extreme is not always better. So Jimmy spoke about having one meal a day only. Now, this might work for Jimmy, but for other people, particularly women, fasting for too long can increase stress hormones and actually have the opposite effect. So you've got to get the balance right. So if you're curious about trying fasting, you've definitely got to start gently. So I would recommend starting with a 12 to 14 hour overnight fast, which is often enough to activate many of these benefits. And this can be as simple as, you know, just having your evening meal and stopping eating by 8 p.m. and then not having breakfast till 8 a.m. or 10 a.m. even. And the goal isn't to deprive yourself, but it's just about giving your body enough space to rest from food and get this repair activated. Now, heat exposure works on exactly the same principle. When you sit in a sauna, your core temperature rises, your heart rate increases, your blood vessels dilate, and it almost mimics this cardiovascular exercise stress that you get. And in response, your body starts producing something called heat shock proteins. Now, these are protective proteins that actually switch on repair in our cells. And there's been some fascinating large studies that have shown that people who use a sauna for 4 to 7 times a week had around a 40% decrease in the risk of cardiovascular mortality. So this is huge. This is better than any of the drugs that treat this. And there was also a reduction in dementia risk as well. And that's just for sitting in a sauna. So I'd say if you've got access to a sauna at your local gym or pool, maybe try to start a user. And generally speaking, with sauna, the more the better. So try to build up to around 15 to 20 minutes, 2 to 4 times a week to start getting some of these benefits. And now let's talk about the opposite of hot here. Let's talk about cold exposure, because this also works in a very similar way. So Jimmy spoke about religiously having an ice bath every morning. And what happens here is when your body enters cold water, your blood vessels will constrict, your heart rate will rise. And again, these stress hormones briefly increase, but it's kind of in a controlled setting. So you're getting this short stress that's activating adaptation in the body. Now, what happens is the cold exposure actually stimulates a type of fat in our body called brown fat, and it causes it to produce more energy. So our metabolic rate goes up and it can actually help lose some of the bad white fat that is more like the stuff that you have around your waist. And as Jimmy mentioned in the episode, it does give you a real boost in your mood. And this is because we actually know it causes your body to release dopamine, and your dopamine levels can increase by about 250%. And dopamine is this feel-good hormone, and that can last throughout the day, making your mood feel better, your focus, and your energy just feel, you know, you feel like you're flying all day afterwards. I'm a huge fan of ice baths myself. But again, more is not better. See, there's a theme here. You do not need to sit in an ice bath for 10 minutes. Even 30 to 60 seconds of this cold water, this extreme cold, can stimulate these pathways. And if you don't have access to an ice bath, you can literally just blast the shower on cold at the end of your hot shower, and this will actually activate some of the same benefits.
Dr. Nicola's second opinion.
So now we're going to move on to some of your questions, and Catherine's got the first one.
A question from Nadia, who says, I've heard you talk about inflammation being a major driver of aging. Is the inflammation different to the sort of thing you'd treat with an ibuprofen? Well, let me jump in and say, when you have autoimmune disease, you're not actually supposed to even take ibuprofen. So it's a great question. Why?
Oh, okay, Nadia. So there is an important difference here. So the inflammation that we treat with something like ibuprofen is usually acute inflammation. For example, if we've got a swollen ankle or a sore muscle or something like that, this is short-term protective inflammation and it will help us heal. But the type that you often hear me talk about in relation to aging is different because this is chronic low-grade inflammation. It's much quieter. You don't necessarily feel it, but it's kind of sitting around in the background for years. And it's this type of inflammation that can be driven by poor sleep, having chronic stress, ultra processed diets, and things like that. And over time, it contributes to things like cardiovascular disease and immune aging. And you simply can't take anti-inflammatory tablets long term to fix this. The solution is very much lifestyle. So yes, it is inflammation, but it's a different type. Now, our next question is from Angela, who's 61, and she says, I've been hearing a lot about mitochondrial health lately, and you mentioned them a lot in the bonus episodes. Could you please explain what mitochondria have to do with aging and how we can directly support them? Okay, Angela, so I love that you've picked up on the fact that I use the word mitochondria a lot. So our mitochondria are often described as the energy powerhouses of the cells. And what they do is they literally take the nutrients that we eat and they take oxygen from the air and they can turn it into a usable form of energy called ATP that our cells can use. Now, as we age, mitochondrial efficiency tends to decline. So that means they produce less energy and they're just not producing it as efficiently. So it's like a power plant that has almost, you know, become old and inefficient and it's starting to give off lots of toxic waste but not produce the same amount of energy anymore. And this is unfortunately really damaging to our cells. And that's why mitochondrial health is really key to aging. Now, the interesting thing is that fasting, heat, and cold all stimulate mitochondrial adaptation because they all require the cell to produce energy more efficiently under a mild stress. So all of the things that I've discussed in this episode will help to give your mitochondria a boost. Okay, so the next question we have is a voice note.
Hi, Dr. Nick, this is Louise. I've heard you talk about strength training as a longevity tool. My question for you is, can you explain why muscle is so protective as we age, but why we often see athletes on the podcast having more negative results?
Oh, Louise, this is such a good question. So what we know is that muscle is metabolically protective. So it helps to improve our glucose sensitivity, which is how well our body will handle harmful sugar. It supports our bone density and it also supports inflammation. It lowers inflammation. So what we generally see is that people with a higher muscle mass have better metabolic health and a lower risk of mortality and age-related diseases. But the key distinction here is that if you are doing moderate, consistent strength training that builds resilience, you get these benefits. But if you are doing chronic, very high intensity training without adequate recovery, this actually tips our body into physiological stress. And athletes are very over prone to operating at the edge of overtraining. They're doing high volume, not much recovery, and under like a constant performance pressure. So this can elevate inflammation in their body and cause a lot of stress in their bodies over time. So again, it comes back to this concept that a little bit of stress is actually good for the body, followed by recovery. This is adaptive, but chronic stress without recovery is actually pro-aging. So yes, strength training is good, but only when paired with adequate rest.
Dr. Nicola's second opinion.
So in each bonus episode, I like to bring it back to simple, practical takeaways, things that you can experiment with at home if they feel right for you. So here are my top three takeaways from today, one for each biohack.
Dr. Nick's quick fix.
Number one, fasting. Keep it gentle. Start with a consistent overnight fasting window before you try anything more extreme because your body responds well to rhythm more than restriction. Number two, sauna. Think of this as cardiovascular training and try to build up to 15 to 20 minutes a few times a week. And number three, cold exposure. Start by having a blast of cold water in the shower for a minute at the end, because even this can activate these adaptive pathways.
Dr. Nick's quick fix.
Now, as I always say, if you are going to make major changes to your lifestyle or try anything that we've spoken about today, make sure you talk it through with a medical professional to see if it's right for you first. Thank you for your questions. I'm going to be back on the sofa with Catherine very soon, and we'll also be returning with more bonus episodes of Dr. Nicola's Second Opinion throughout the series.
If you can't get enough Dr. Nicola in your life, she will be back with us very soon on the What's My Age Again sofa as we reveal another celebrity's biological age. Get in touch on the socials if you've got a question, and we'll answer them in a future episode of Dr. Nicola's Second Opinion.
A Rayo Original Podcast.